Greetings and welcome to another edition of TechNet Radio. Today we're going to talk about the Azure Certification 7534 Architecting Microsoft Azure Solutions. On the program today, you have myself as host, Dan Stoltz. You can reach me on my blog, itproguru.com. And I'm super excited to be joined by my very good friend and peer, Brian Lewis. Brian, thanks for joining us today. And maybe start us off with telling us a little about you and what you do.
Hi, Dan. I'm glad to be here, and I'm super excited to have you here as well. I am an IT pro evangelist, just like yourself, and what I do is I work with Microsoft's community to show and teach the newest technologies, and I get to play with all the newest tools as well, so that's kind of fun.
So if our audience wants to follow you, where would they go to do that?
If someone wants to follow me, you can reach me on my thoughtsonit.com. That is my blog, and you can certainly reach me there. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook and all those things. You can get those off of my blog as well.
Great.
My thoughts on IT.
And we'll post a link to that on the video landing page as well. Now, this is a really exciting topic that we're talking about because you and I did some live events in Boston and New York in the last few months that where we went through the book, the Microsoft Press book, Architecting Azure Solutions, and use that as the curriculum for the event series, right? We had a blast, and the reality is we sold out. We sold out like within a couple of hours of even announcing that they were open. Like, didn't matter the size of the venue, it was just sold out instantly. So obviously we hit a good topic, and we decided as we went through that kind of trial, we found that the audience didn't really have enough background knowledge to start taking in that deep dive into architecting Azure solutions. So we wanted to put together kind of a prerequisite because we get to take that show on the road again. And we don't have the date set yet, but it was looking like June, July timeframe. We're going to be crossing the US with an entire event series on this. And even before that, we're going to offer this online for those people that want to take in that great content in an online setting. And so there's some stuff, some prerequisites, some foundational stuff they want to educate our audience on before they even attend that class. So this is our offering for free to both introduce those upcoming training classes, and more importantly, to give our audience the foundation that they need to understand before coming to one of our classes where we go really deep, really fast.
Yeah, one of the things, like you mentioned earlier today, when we were talking, the people that came to the event, a good number of them hadn't, you know, really known what Azure was, how many data centers we had, all the background things of what we can do in it, spinning up VMs or services. And so this foundation is pretty important to get ahead of time, just so that we can not blow your minds with more content, right? There's only so much you can hold in a certain period of time. So hopefully this will help.
Yeah, Brian, there's a couple of things. I went ahead and put up on the screen our URLs for our blogs and stuff. But I wanted to kind of let everybody know also that, you know, though we're starting that training now and we've got these upcoming events, they can also go to Microsoft Virtual Academy because there's a ton of information out there at Microsoft Virtual Academy. So I want to encourage people to go do that. But most importantly, that event series that we've got coming up, that online series, the registration is not open yet, but what is open is we have a newsletter list that people can join the newsletter list, and then as soon as it gets open, that's the first place that this will be published. So the people that join that itproguru.com/join, those are the people that are going to kind of get dibs on the seats in both the in-person events as well as the online events. Though I don't think we'll have a problem with a sellout in online events because we can handle a pretty heavy capacity.
So Dan, I want to double cover that. What am I signing up for when I sign up on itproguru.com/join? What exactly am I buying into? Ginsu knives? What do I get?
Yeah, you don't get any steak knives, unfortunately. This is a newsletter that I've actually, frankly, been trying to get in place for a couple of years at Microsoft, but because of privacy, it was a huge challenge. Those issues are all gone now. I've got strict guidelines on what I can do, and there's a privacy statement right in the top of that. If you go to that page, you'll see a link to the Microsoft standard privacy statement. You'll also see a link to join register that actually takes you to a different page, because my blog itproguru.com is actually not inside the Microsoft property. I have actually a site that I'm hosting on Azure. So I can't actually collect the data there. I need to collect it through our standard processes so that, you know, there's a checkbox on the individual user's profile that says, do not email me. And anytime an email, even if it's a subscribed newsletter, goes out, it has to check that checkbox. If that checkbox is turned on, it doesn't matter what you subscribe to, you automatically cannot get an email from Microsoft. So this newsletter goes through that engine that processes emails and allows us to check that do not email flag before sending it out. So in a nutshell, it's, you know, it's doing all the legitimate stuff that we have to do in order to send an email to our customers, even whenever they ask us to do that. But most importantly, what are they going to get? I'm going to do generally a monthly newsletter. In times when we have, like, when Windows Server 2016 launches, I'm sure we're going to have a big set of launch events and stuff like that. During times like that, when we have some really big things happening and everything happens really fast, there might be more than one a month. Maybe it's two, maybe even it's three if there's just that much stuff going on. But generally, it's going to be really low volume. Generally, once a month, I'm going to have one or two articles in there about something that people that are in the technology field would be interested in. But the most important thing is a list of events. These are events. I'm going to highlight those in the Northeast, which is my territory, but I'll have links to events all across the country. These are Microsoft events. These are third-party events. These are community events, and where you can go to get additional event information. So I really kind of want it to be a one-stop clearinghouse for events that are either from Microsoft first-party technology, the DX team that we're on, and also those that are talking about the same technologies that we're teaching about.
So Dan, I want to commend you for putting this together. I know it's been tough. We've all been asked by customers to, you know, hey, send me information when you have another event coming through the city. And we have some internal rules that say, hey, you know what? We don't want to spam the world. So you can't send emails to people. And I can't, you know, keep a list of people to say, hey, this is going on. So you were able to get this put together. This is the place to sign up if you want to know about events that are coming through your cities. And I know you're going to focus more on your area. However, I think US-wide, we'll all be getting in our events in your newsletter. So it's useful for anybody inside the US to know
Absolutely
what events
correct.
Are going on.
Yeah, not only that, but the first couple of events where I'm doing all of the work, that's kind of why it's limited. I would gather possibly even by the February newsletter, which is coming out in a couple of weeks, but more likely by the March newsletter, I'll have the entire U.S. showcased on there. And my hope is by the end of June that we can actually separate it and have different editions, like there'll be a Northeast U.S. edition, a Southeast, maybe there's an East Coast edition or a West Coast edition, where we can do segregation or separation by geo. But the reality is, we're a roadshow, right? We take our training on the road. So just finding out about event series and knowing where to go to sign up for it, even if, you know, because if I'm having an event in Boston, there's a good chance it's going to come to Chicago or Dallas too. So, you know, having, you know, whenever I give you the link to the Boston one, it's also going to be the link to the Dallas or Chicago one too. So absolutely.
Well, thanks for working so hard on that, Dan. That's going to come in handy.
You bet. So let's take a look at what our agenda is for today. We're going to look real quickly at a little bit about the certification, the 7534 Architecting Azure Solutions. Then we're going to look at the jump starts, just kind of let people know what the jump starts are, what this event series is that we're talking about, and then we're going to dive into some Azure basics. Now, because of the length and the volume of content that we're covering today, we're not going to be able to cover it in one sitting. So we're going to do a couple of different recordings, and so you might have a part two or part three, but we strongly encourage everybody to go through all three parts. If you want to go to the class, if you know, whenever you register, it's going to be a prerequisite. So, you know, we're going to need everybody to go through it if you're coming to the class. But even if you're not coming to the class or don't have any desire to go to a class, whether it be an all-day online class or an all-day, person-to-person class, it's still great information to have to understand the Microsoft stack. Not only the Microsoft stack, but how we as IT professionals should be looking at the cloud and technology. So we'll look a little bit about basics of Azure, and then we'll get down to business with actually showing what it looks like. What is the, you know, there's a couple different portals. Azure just went through a major overhaul with a brand new portal, a version 2 portal. So we'll take a quick peek at both of those, and then we're going to dive in. We're going to dive into the fabric. We're going to dive into VMs and storage and web apps and more services, so that our audience really has an understanding of the platform to build on whenever we go through the certification process. So let me start with the exam. The exam 7534 is part of a series of exams. We've got the exam 533 and 532. 532 is more designed, more catered toward developers and developer community. The 533 is more tailored toward implementers, those that are actually out, you know, pushing buttons and making things happen, actually out there building. And then the 534, which is the one that we're going to focus on with this series and with these videos, prerequisites, is more about designing. But if you get all three of these, you're actually going to be getting a bigger umbrella certification that is the MCSD. So it's kind of like, you know, where the old MCSE, or we now have an MCSE too, but it's a collection of, if you understand all three of these, if you pass all three of these exams, then you're showing your prowess across the entire stack of both developing, architecting, developing, and even implementing these solutions. So it can be a real big advantage to have something like that on your resume as you're competing with others that may not be so credentialed.
Yeah, when I've seen the MCSD listed, they've talked to MCSD, Azure Solution Architect. And so having Azure Solution Architect on your resume, that certainly tells people, you know, what your experience is and what your knowledge base is. So that should help going forward, because the cloud is the way of the future, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, we're gonna talk a little bit about architect and what that means. But if you go to the job boards and stuff, and you look at the postings, oh my God, these guys are making so much money. You know, it's kind of mind blowing. And there's so many positions open. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, why that is as we go through the training. You know, this is not something, you know, as we go through this class, Brian, we're not going to be, you know, this is not how to pass the test. Okay, so it is about how to pass the test, but it's also what you need to know and what you need to know to become an architect, a cloud architect. And once you're able to do that, then you can also pass the test. So it's kind of about both. So diving in a little bit about this particular exam, there's six different parts. There's designing Microsoft Azure infrastructure and networking, where we'll go deeper into those different components. Securing resources, security is obviously an important thing whenever you're thinking about the cloud. Designing application storage and data access strategy. Designing advanced application, design websites, and then design management, monitoring, and business continuity strategies. All of those we go really deep into. Not on this video series. This is what the entire exam covers, and I've got the percentages on the screen there, and I've got a link for more information if people want to dive in. But notice the word design in front of all of these. This is not implementing. This is designing. This is not programming. This is designing. A lot of people don't understand is, in order to design, you have to know all that other stuff. So this is not an easy exam. You have to, in order to design a solution, you have to know what the implementers can do. In order to design a solution, you have to understand what the developers can do, so that you can design a system and then bring those other people in to actually execute. So it's a fairly complicated exam, but if you can nail it, wow! What a thrill to have something like that on your resume.
Yeah, I've taken all three, and I would say 7534 was the toughest. 7532 was hard for me, just because there was a lot of programming questions. Mm-hmm. That were generic programming. But the three tests do test your knowledge quite a bit. They are not easy, you know, paper C&E type things. You actually do have to know what you're doing to pass, and they're pretty good. 7534, I do believe, is the hardest of the three.
Yep, and just to build on that, one other thing that I've observed as I've taken these different tests is, you know, in the past, you talked about the paper MCSE. In the past, you could literally study. You could read a book, like, you know, the book that we're using as the curriculum, and go pass the test. But the reality is the tests are not that way anymore, which is why in the book and also in the training course, we have a lot of hands-on labs. So you actually walk you through step-by-step these different labs to actually learn the product, use the product, and do the things you need to do and understand the things you need to understand in order to design these solutions.
That was one of the things I found in all three of the exams is if you've done the work, if you've used it and played with it, you know, knowing how to create machines and knowing how to get them to work and creating networks and hooking things up, if you can do that, you've got 50% of the tests already taken care of. And then it's the other 50% that you have to study and figure some of the things out and what they're looking for. But that base will get you through 50% of all three of the tests.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'll take it one step further. And watching a video of us doing it is not the same as you doing it. So, you know, it's great that we have the video so you can rewind if you get stuck somewhere, like, what did I do wrong? But the reality is you actually have to step through that process yourself because you learn so much more by doing it. Now, a little bit more about the events that we have coming up. This is the agenda that we use for the Boston and New York events. It's going to be very similar to that. Frankly, my favorite section, though, is the very first. So I would highly encourage people to get there on time. And that includes also for the online version of it, because we do some exam tips and tricks. Now, if we have time, we're going to hit some of those exam tips and tricks on this video just as a primer. So stick around for the last part of this series, and we're going to hit some of those tips and tricks, not only for this exam, but just exams in general. Some really good information there. We're going to go into each of the components. Our objective is to really teach what you need to learn to pass the test, but also teach you how to architect solutions so you can do this in your business. We're going to look at field experiences, you know, things that you have found, things that I've found. And you know what, we're going to have, particularly when we do the online one, I believe we're going to have people doing Q&A as well. So we should have a pretty decent sized staff out there doing Q&A to really collect those thoughts of the audience out there that is interested in this kind of an examination.
Excellent. Hey, as a quick spoiler, one of the things that, I'm sure we'll cover this and more, which is, you know, when you get all those word questions and you read through a ton of stuff, and then you go and you answer three questions after it about that stuff, one of the tricks I learned was go read the questions first and then go back to the
data. Yeah, that's one of my tips.
Spoiler.
Sure. Yeah.
That made a huge difference in time.
That's one example of a tip that can just save you an enormous amount of time, right? By going and reading those questions, because then whenever you read through the scenario, which the scenarios can take you 20 minutes to read. I mean, there's some of them are nuts. You know what you're looking for.
And then you use like three data points out of it. Most of it's wasted your time.
Yes, yeah. It's most of it wasted, right, because they want to make sure that you understand what it is that you're doing, right? So just another flashbang on the itproguru.com/join. The only way to get an invite, the only way to assure yourself of getting an invite for that is to join that mailing list. I mentioned the questions. We will have somebody doing Q&A on the online as well as on the live version of the events. So, though we don't have that now with this video series, we will with the actual classes. So let's talk about what is an architect. Well, an architect, by definition, is a person who designs and in many cases also is supervises construction. What the heck does that mean in terms of what we do, though? So, Brian, I'm not sure if you knew this. But there's been lots of studies and by big names like Gartner and Forrester and others where they have talked to CIOs. And one of the things that they have discovered through this, as you read the different periodicals, is that there is a huge weaknesses in businesses. And that is that the weakness is of their IT people, of their engineers, of their developers, of people that are generally in IT, not understanding the business and how the business, what the business challenges are. So there are people out there that are executing, right? They're not designers, they're not architects, they're not seeing the big picture, they're just executing on what they've been asked to do. An architect is not that person. The architect is one that is given a challenge and he goes out and he creates the solution. Being an architect is not about, you know, coding something. Being an architect is about seeing all the possibilities of what's around you and the capabilities that you have to leverage against the challenges that you're facing. And sometimes they're quite simple. So I'll give you an example. So one of my challenges was this whole newsletter thing that we talked about, right? I've had this challenge for a long time. I made it my mission to fix it. Even in a bureaucracy, as you know, a company as big as Microsoft and somebody as small as me can make some fundamental change. And if we look at the entirety of our business, no matter what businesses these people work for, if they look at the business challenge and understand the business challenge and then create solutions to solve those problems, amazing things can happen. And that's really what becoming an architect is all about. It's not about the technology, and it's more about understanding the business and understanding technology and being a bridge between those two. Most people think the CIO is really the person that does that. They're the person that understands the business and they also understand the technology. And the reality is that's true. They are the person that understands the business and understands the technology. But you know what? They're one person and sometimes hundreds of thousands of employees and thousands of departments and, you know, thousands of different divisions sometimes. I mean, and you know what? A lot of companies don't have a CIO. So who does that responsibility fall on? Well, of late, it's been falling on architects, cloud architects in particular, but architects. So the whole architect thing, though it's been around for a while, is getting more and more and more popular as the things that are available to us from a technology standpoint in terms of what we can do in the cloud, what we can do in mobile, what we can do in Internet of Things, all of these great things that we can do, all these great technologies, we can bring those to bear to solve real business problems. And nobody else understands how to do that. So here's another key. Let's call this a tip, okay? You don't have to be a cloud architect or be a title of a cloud architect to do these things. But if you do these things, you can really advance your career. So, you know, this is something that I've been doing in my career for years. It's something that I've been teaching for years. And it's something that if you look around at others that are super, super successful, they're also doing those things. So even if you're not an architect by title or by trade, my view is everybody should strive to become an architect because that is the future of IT. One of the things the architect has to do is they have to translate business objectives into actions. So I've got a quick list here of some things that you have to think about. And these are not things that, oh, I can do that or I can do that. Each one of these bullets could take you quite a lot of time to really understand what it is. So identify problems. A lot of times, you know, a business unit will come to you with a problem and you give them a quick fix. But the reality is it didn't fix the underlying root cause. It kind of put a Band-Aid on the problem that they identified. But the real problem was much deeper. And if they would have spent a little bit of time thinking deeper about holistically the entire environment, they might have come up with a better solution. So determine the requirements to solve each problem, including the root problems, and determine the technology available to help solve that problem. And obviously, you know, my hope is that you find that, you know, Microsoft and Microsoft technology can help in a big way with that. I mean, we do have the broadest and in most cases the deepest technology, so that's not a stretch to assume that. The next step is to identify strategic partners. You know, a lot of businesses, they just don't have the internal resources to take on some of these challenges. And the partners, we have some awesome partners as part of the Microsoft Partner Network. So leveraging those partners to help us do some of these things can really be a big benefit. We have to determine the likely barriers and then determine an additional value. This is a step that everybody wants to skip, but it's so important because, you know, the barriers are often easy to find, but the additional value often really hard to find because the additional value often is a completely different apartment or different part of the business that's not even looking at, you know, this is a solution. But if this solution that you're putting in place can solve somebody else's problem too, and that gives you more champions, more capability of generating, you know, funding and support that you might need to actually put this project into play. So a vital, vital, vital part of the process of translating business objectives into actions is to determine additional value if there is any. And then, just as importantly or more important than anything else that we've talked about today, is getting started. So many projects go on a shelf because of, you know, lack of time, lack of priority, lack of funding, lack of this, lack of that. pick one, pick some low hanging fruit, pick something that you think is going to be fairly easy to do. I can knock it out in a few hours. I can knock it out in a few days. Work on it a couple of hours a week, you know, a couple hours a month if you have to. Get started learning about the technology. Dive in. Once you solve one problem with these, with this new architect mentality, oh my God, the thought processes, the waves of things that come into your brain by that different way of thinking are absolutely amazing. You know, Brian, whenever I talk about Azure, I like to use a little bit of analogy. And that is, I use Visio, because Visio gives you the capability of taking, you know, on the left hand, on the right hand side, you have a blank canvas when you open up a new Visio document. So you have this blank canvas with nothing on it. And whenever you start up Azure, you basically have, you know, nothing, right? And on the left hand side, you have a whole bunch of templates, right? Well, that's what Visio is too, a whole bunch of templates on the left hand side. Now, what Visio will do is Visio will allow you to drag and drop these different components onto your canvas to give you some really awesome drawings of your infrastructure. Right? I mean, you can lay out your clusters, you can lay out your servers, you can lay out your networks, your load balancers, your routers, all that stuff. You can configure the properties of your IP addresses and your ports that you're using and what's open and what's closed and all that stuff, your WAN connections and your hybrid connectivity and your VPNs and all that cool stuff, and it looks great. But at the end of the day, Brian, what is it? It's a picture. It's a picture of your network. And whenever you do this,
looks on,
you do
on your picture, like the cluster.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's a cluster. But in Azure, though, I have to admit, it's not as pretty as Visio. Visio does an awesome job at making really pretty stuff. In Azure, it's basically the same thing, right? You have templates on the left. You add a template. It's not drag and drop, but you add a template. You set the properties of that template. You know, what do I want my server name to be? What do I want my network name to be? What, you know, subnet do I want to use for my network? But when you put that on your canvas, it's not a picture of a server. It's the server. And the real beauty of templates are, a template doesn't have to be one thing. A template could be a whole resource cluster of things. So I've got on this slide a database server cluster, an email server cluster, a cluster of whatever. I could literally add an 8-node cluster by simply adding a template using Azure. It's going to add my network. It's going to add all my servers. It's going to add all the networking pieces that are needed to make all that magic happen. It's just a template. I'm literally adding that to my canvas, and those machines are out there spinning up. And we're going to talk about how we can actually do that as part of this series. But I wanted to give people kind of a level set of what the cloud capabilities are. It's designing and building stuff out of resources that are available to you from a third party, Microsoft, and gives you the capability of kind of, you know, taking the burden of the infrastructure off of you and putting it onto your partner.
So to boil down what you just said, I can go and I can take and make a template, and that's going to create my server with the number of network cards I want, with the IP addresses I want, connect it up to the other servers in the way I want, and create pretty much my entire build out for me just off of defining something in a text file or a template.
Yes. And that text file is actually a JSON file. We'll talk more about that whenever we go
pretty
through the
powerful
process. Very, very powerful. And you don't, the key to that is you don't have to be a programmer to do it. You don't have to be an expert at text configuration files or anything like that, because there's a graphical user interface that you can use to do all of that stuff. So you don't have to use the templates, but if you don't have to create your own templates is what I meant to say, because you can use, there's thousands of templates already out there. And you know what? It's not just Microsoft templates. There are companies all over the world that are creating templates on Azure. Let's think about this for a minute. Why would somebody create a template outside of Microsoft for Azure? Let's think in from, why would a third-party company want to do that? Well, it's really simple. If they've got, say, a CRM solution, or they've got an ERP solution, or they've got any solution, and they want people to be able to spin it up fast, they can create that template, host it, have customers host in Azure, click a couple of buttons, and the user can have the sync server, the database server, the front-end web servers, all that stuff done, configured for them. They're up and running in the same day, and This is no longer a 3 month or a 3 year process for deploying their solution. You know, they can literally use Azure for that.
You could come to my website as crmcompany.com. You click on a button to say you want to be a customer. Of course, you pay me. But then in the background, I submit that JSON template, have everything created automatically for you, and offer it to you like it's from my servers. You don't have to know that I'm hosting it on a third party. I bill you direct, and I take care of the things on the back end. Now I don't have to have a data center for my company. It makes it for my company so much easier to do business and to create my servers and services and offer them to my customers.
Absolutely. And that's how startups are doing it today. Startups are not, you know, buying honking servers anymore. Those days are over. They're hosting that stuff in Azure. And let me add on to that one more piece. Yes, that is a perfect scenario of how customers are using this for deploying these templates. But you know, one other thing that they're doing is they can also offload that expense and that paperwork, that management of the Azure resources, to Microsoft. So you can, you know, they can buy the licenses from your from this company, and they're paying for the license directly to them. But the way that they've always done business, the infrastructure is the customer's problem, and they're just giving the customer a mechanism to easily and rapidly deploy that. And oh, by the way, since we have, you know, things like Azure Stack and stuff like that, they can deploy it on-prem too. We're not going to get into that because it's not on the exam. But I do want to highlight that there's so many different scenarios where Azure is just kills it in terms of being able to provide services that customers need today. So a little bit more about Azure and what is Azure and Azure infrastructure. Well, Azure Data Center has 24 regions. And in a nutshell, your fabric is your infrastructure services, your compute, your storage, your networking. We're going to go into a lot more detail as we get into the exam and talk about each one of these topics, almost literally each one of these topics, because each of these topics are on the exam. But for now, let's just say that this is the fabric. Recognize that term, fabric. And these are the containers. These are the things that are needed for everything else in Azure to work. So what is everything else? Well, everything else is platform services. Now, when we talk about infrastructure services, think about, so we have under compute virtual machines. So think about that as a virtual machine in the cloud, right? You know, it's actually physically running on Hyper-V in Microsoft Azure Data Center. And it's nothing more than a VM. But when we get into platform services, the model changes a little bit because you're now not getting the VM, you're getting the rights to the applications that are running on the VM. So as an example, I'll give you an example, a gateway, right? You want a gateway service, okay? This is still under networking. So this is actually referred to as an infrastructure service, but it's being delivered as a platform service. So what's happening under the cover is, you know, Microsoft's not having an engineer going in and plugging in a switch for you or a gateway, you know, a device. They're not doing that. What they're doing is they're spinning up a server in the background. That server's already pre-configured with all the things that need to happen. All the network cards, all the magic through software is all happening under the covers through these configuration files. And so they're delivering that to customers as a service, as a platform service. So all of these things that are on the top, these platform services, are all built on top of the infrastructure, but you can buy the infrastructure pieces, or you can also deploy the platform pieces. So if we're doing like HD Insight in the middle of the screen under analytics and IoT, HD Insights is Hadoop, basically. It gives you the capability of doing Hadoop clusters. So it's not this mystic, magical thing that they've created that takes computers out of the loop. Computers are still there. They're just under the covers, right? All that infrastructure still has to be spun up to make it happen. But there's a platform layer that abstracts all of that complexity of setting all that up and allows you to deploy it as a service. So you've got, you know, lots of things from analytics and IoT, data integration, media, content distribution networks. Look at media services. I mean, the Olympic Games, the biggest media outlet, biggest, longest media outlet ever known to man, And where is it hosted? It's hosted on Azure Media Services. It has been hosted for years on Azure Media Services. So Microsoft has been, you know, they've learned so much and they're so good at this stuff that they're trusted by the biggest and the best. When it's got to be done right every time.
It's not just the scalability in the media services, right? I mean, that certainly we can handle huge, huge volumes of people coming to it, but it's the automation behind there as well. Absolutely. And you think about, I need to target cell phones. I need to target larger devices. I've got to basically take my video and change the type of video that it is for these different environments. Azure does that all automatically for you. You give it the original feed or the original video file, and it will take and make all those types of video files for it on the back end automatically. But it's really awesome, the platform as a service abilities that they give you.
Yeah, and we've got developer services and compute services. We're not going to go through all of those today, or all of these today. These are the things we're going to dive into as we go through the certification class.
The analogy I'll throw in here, you know, is something we've been doing for years and years in IT, right? We built servers and we put web servers on there. Certainly that's one way to go, but then I have to patch the server, I have to manage the server, I have to do all that work. Another way is to have a hoster just host a website for you, and then all you have to manage is your data that you put onto that website.
Yep.
We've done it for years and years. That's exactly what this is. Although we do a lot more than just websites. We do all the services that you see here, and we continue to add more. So it's really, going forward, making it easier to do your job so you can manage less and less.
Yeah, and let me expand on that a little bit, because I have to do that in the way of a story. You know, my blog is a pretty popular blog. I get I guess it's relative, but I get about 150,000 unique visitors a month on my blog. So there's always somebody on my blog 24 hours a day because it's accessed from all over the world. And one of the things that I found was a couple of years ago, I moved it to Azure. And where it was running was in a data center on a Hyper-V server running 15,000 RPM drives. It was a high-end, you know, data center class server, state-of-the-art hardware, lots of memory. I wanted it to be a good, fast server. And you know what? Microsoft came out with their services, their Azure services a few years ago. It's been about 5 years now, 4 years. And I was like, I waited a while. I didn't go right away, but a year probably into it, I was like, you know what? Let me try it. You know, I was worried about it because I was like, well, you know what? There's no way they can, you know, they can have the performance that I can have on my own high-end server. But what I found was, wow, was I wrong. I got almost a 3x increase in performance just by moving my blog to Azure. What? How is that possible? So I will also share with you, my performance got a lot slower about 8 months later, because Microsoft, 8 months later was about the time that Microsoft introduced throttling and premium services. So prior to that, apparently I was on the trial premium services and didn't know it, right? So now I'm getting more like I was getting in my data center performance, but I can ramp it back up by just, you know, turning on the premium checkbox, right, to add premium services in there, and I can get all that extra speed if I wanted to. But I don't need to. And let me share something with you about, you know, something simple like a website, right? And how can performance be so much faster from running on my own hardware, my own high-end data center class hardware? So picture this, just a quick IIS story. You have IIS, and I think most of our audience is going to know what IIS is. It's a web engine, right? It runs on Windows, and it services web requests. So what IIS does is it will get the request from the user. It will build the HTML file. It will pull information needed from the database. Well, first checks the credentials and all that stuff, make sure you have access rights to it, all that stuff. It pulls information from the database, it pulls information from various static files it might be pulling together, renders that all as an HTML file, sends that back out to the user in a browser. The browser opens up that page, the browser then contacts the web server again, says, I need this image, I need this image, I need this image, I need this image, I need this video, I need this image, I need this document. And the web server and the browser are communicating while all of this is happening. That's not the case in Azure. That's not the way Azure works. All that work that's being done by the web server in our on-prem web server is not being done by the web server in Azure, because there's all these different services that are broken apart. So my database is not the only thing in my environment. The database is actually separate. But the database is a separate, and the separate engine is calling the query for that, right? When you get to the, let's just talk about the images and the media for a second. So let's say we've got that same page. We're rendering it out. So first of all, the web server, what is it doing? It's grabbing the information, it's putting it all together like it does on-prem. But then all the heavy lifting stuff, it's being done by somebody else. The pull of the query from SQL is being done by a backend service. Okay. The authentication is being done by another backend service. It's not being done by the web server. That task is offloaded. Okay. And then when it comes to putting it, so all the web server has to do is put all this stuff together, right? And render it out to the client. But then the heavy lifting comes in. I'll have all these images. The browser is no longer communicating with the web server. It's actually going to a different spot, and it's communicating with the storage service that's rendering those images and rendering that those files, or it's going to the media services that's rendering those streams. So all of these services think of it like a hard drive. You know, when you write to one hard drive, you get one performance, but if you take those writes over many hard drives, it's faster, or reads across many hard drives, it's faster. Because you're doing more things at one time and you have more people doing things. Not only that, those individual functions are highly optimized to deliver just that service. So it doesn't have to do everything. It just has to do one thing really, 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 really well. That's the power of platform services, is you get all of those benefits by simply moving to a platform. So platform is much faster, much better. And you know what? It's also usually a lot cheaper. So it's pretty awesome technology.
So Dan, you mentioned the cost. It's cheaper. But that's a lot of work, it sounds like. Boy, you must have to do a whole lot more work keeping this up and running than your old server, right?
Oh, God, I wish. No, I don't wish. I'm glad it's not that way. No, because in a infrastructure as a service, you own the operating system and everything that goes on it, right? The only thing that you're really hosting under infrastructure services is the hardware. Basically the fabric, the hardware layer, the virtualization layer, that's what Microsoft is managing for you. In a platform service, Microsoft takes all that complexity and they manage it for you. What you have to manage is your website, your data, your application. If it's your custom application, then you would upload your application so that it runs. If it's a third party application, you know, like WordPress or whatever, that's okay too. It doesn't have to be yours. You're just managing the application. So if it's, you know, so let's say I'm just going to use WordPress as an example because that's what my blog's written in. You know, so I have to do updates to WordPress because I choose when the WordPress on my site is going to be updated. But the operating system, I don't have a clue. I don't even know what it's running on. I don't know what version. I don't know what patch. I don't know what hotfixes are running on. I don't care. I don't need to care because that's being handled for me. All I care about is my application. So one of the things that customers always don't, they really don't understand is how big or, you know, how Microsoft can offer these seemingly limitless services to them. And they are seemingly limitless services. And the way that they've been able to do that is they have invested an enormous amount of money into two things, R&D and data centers. Just massive amounts of money. And in fact, you know, Microsoft has more regions than anybody else in the world, 24 regions online today. And these data centers are huge, huge capacity. I mean, we're talking about a data center has like 16 buildings. Each of those buildings is as big as a football field. They are massive. You know, that's big enough to hold two jumbo jets. Massive.
And let's point out that 24 regions is not 24 data centers.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's massive. So hundreds of data centers, and you know what? All of these data centers and all this connectivity and all the stuff that Microsoft has had to do to make all this magic happen has made them one of the top three networks in the world for covered speed and connections. How big are they in terms of regions? Double AWS, twice the size of AWS, six times the size of Google, massive. Microsoft offers the largest VM available on the market, period. The G series, 32 cores, 448 gigabytes of RAM, SSD drives. I'd love to ask our live audience, who would like to have some servers like that? Who has access to servers like that? Right? And nobody raises their hand. The reality is though, Brian, what's the reality?
the reality is we all have access to it.
We all have access to it because we all have access to Azure, right? All you have to do is, you know, have an account, be able to deploy servers, you know, pay the bill. You know, sign up for the premium services to get your SSD, to get your big machines, and fire that puppy up. 20 minutes later, you got one of these servers running, right? So,
and the really cool thing is,
it is a cool.
You can run that for a couple minutes and or half hour and do what you want to, and then turn it off, right? So you only have to pay for a half hour of it, as
Love
opposed
it.
To, yeah. It, so if so, you have big workloads you want to do, there's
picture this.
Great stuff to do in Azure.
You got a game. You want to make a gaming room for an hour for an event that you're doing for you know, you want to have 10,000 people on it. What? How cool would that be, right? Stand up some stuff in Azure. It's going to cost you a minuscule fraction of what it would cost you to actually deploy the hardware, and use it for what you need, and then turn it off, and you don't get charged for it anymore. Just absolutely amazing model. And you know, when we talk about startups and companies that are starting from scratch, this is the way. You know, and frankly, when we talk about the Azure services and kind of back to the platform a little bit, one of the things that I want to make sure that customers understand is there are some really big differences between the Microsoft offerings and other companies' offerings. Microsoft offerings are much, much, much wider, but they're also much, much, much deeper. And we're not going to go into any specifics about that, but just think in terms of, you know, our offerings on the database side and the way sharding works and, you know, how you split the data to give you optimum performance, even if you've got millions of people hitting it every minute. You know, you just get amazing performance. I was at an event yesterday. I was doing an Azure event yesterday, and I asked a fairly large audience of people, you know, give me some challenges, give me some workloads that you would not be comfortable putting in Azure or Azure cannot do. Not a single person. Well, they shot a bunch of stuff my way. And every single time I was able to say, nope, this is how you would do that in Azure. This is how you would do that in Azure. And so the problem is not that we can't do it with cloud services. The problem is people don't understand what technology is available to them to bring that technology to bear on the problem that they have.
And you would do it differently, right? I mean, when I do it on premises, I buy a server and I put in a terabyte of RAM and I do, you know, my SAN and whatever kind of stuff. It's different when we use cloud services, the tools I'm going to use. But it's just like going from building a house with a hammer and nails to building a house with an air nailer, right? You see how fast those go in now.
Absolutely.
It's a different tool. You do it a little different way, you get the same result.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that analogy. I don't have to start using that. Can I steal that, Brian?
Take it. Just made it up.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've had some pretty major changes to Azure over the course of the last couple of months, right? So I want to talk a little bit about the classic model. The classic model is kind of what we refer to as the legacy portal, I guess you could say. That's the portal that was actually the primary portal whenever the test was written. Now, remember, this training class is all about what's on the exam. But there are times when the exam is going to change. We're not necessarily teaching for the exam, but the reality is both portals, because the first portal, though it was not in production, was actually on the exam. So we have to, as we teach the exam, we have to teach both portals. So in the classic model, we have a cloud service, we have a VM with an IP address in that cloud service, we have a storage account, we have a virtual network, and as you add those, you create links to the storage account, you create the disk blob, blob storage for the virtual machine, that's your C drive, your D drive, your E drive, whatever drives you need on that. Your virtual network, you create a subnet for that network. Not very intuitive, not very intuitive at all. You have load-balanced endpoints with IP addresses that are tied to the VM. Not the way we do things on-prem. So some of these concepts are really hard for people to understand as they want to deploy because, oh, by the way, you had to do it in a certain sequence. And if you didn't do it in the right sequence, well, you got to whip out your old friend PowerShell and go fix it. Or delete and start over, which for some people that aren't PowerShell gurus like you and I, they ended up just having to delete it and start over because it seemed to be easier for them. But in the Resource Manager, everything changes. So in Resource Manager, you start with a resource group, and you don't even have cloud services anymore. The cloud services are basically your resource group. And you have these dependencies that are able to be defined. And so these dependencies are like such as the VM has a dependency of a storage account, which is your disk blob, right? So your storage account has to be created before your virtual machine. And then you have load balancers that have a with a backend pool of NICs, and then the NICs reference the VM. The VM references the NIC. The NIC references the VM IP address, the VNet, the subnet, the load balancer. You have all these references. And then you have the network security group to manage your ACLs. And it's much more like what we normally do in our on-prem environment. Now, not only does that actually simplify things from the back end and the way things are drawn out, but it also super simplifies them from a deployment standpoint, because the resource manager, everything can be deployed as a single unit. So I can have a virtual machine, a network, all the storage. I can have multiple virtual machines and availability set for to give me high availability. All of that stuff can be done inside of the resource group, so that can be managed as a single entity. Well, that brings us to demo time. So, Brian, maybe you can just take a minute here as we wrap up this first part of our three-part series, and give us an indication of what's coming in part two and part three. Now that we've killed everybody with PowerPoint, I presume we can enlighten them with some of the great stuff that they can do with Azure in the upcoming video series.
Well, thanks, Dan. Yeah, it was a good nap for me. But so now what we're going to do, we're going to close this one off. I'll show the demos at the beginning of the next session. So what we're looking through here is, you know, how to prepare for 7534. And we went through a lot of information there that was really base on what we need to know about Azure. The next piece is still pretty base. We're going to go into the initial portal, so the one that the majority of the questions on the test are about. We're going to look at that portal. We're going to look at just an overview of it, and then we'll go in and we'll create a virtual machine with the infrastructure as a service, a VM that we can go play with, and we'll look at what it takes to do that. And I'll also take a look at the new portal as well, the current production portal, and we'll look at the differences there and see why we went to it. We'll spend most of the time in the old portal, because that's where a lot of the questions and the tests are from.
Sure, and at some point we do go over the new portal. Is that part three, I presume?
So in part three, we will go over the new portal. Yes, that's correct. I'm going to show it just to do a real quick comparison of the two portals, okay, so you can see them both. But we're going to spend the majority of the time in part two in the initial portal, and in part three, we'll go and spend all of our time in the current production portal.
So the bottom line is, at the end of this introduction or prerequisite, they will have at least seen both of the portals in Azure and understand how to create a virtual machine and tie a network to it and all that kind of the basic stuff.
They will know enough to be dangerous, yes.
Okay, awesome. So on closing, I want to thank you, Brian, for coming here. I want to remind our audience that if they don't want to miss, and trust me, you don't want to miss these upcoming videos, these upcoming events that we have planned. The only way to do that, to not miss them, is to get invited through itproguru.com/join. So on that page, perhaps I can take a quick look at what that looks like so that they can see where they're going to actually sign up for that newsletter. So let me switch over to my blog and just kind of show people what that looks like, that page, the itproguru.com/join. If we go here, it tells you about what this newsletter or what this membership means. It's a tech membership program. Some of the events that we've got coming up, we've got the Azure Infrastructure Hybrid Cloud event series now. We've got Enterprise Mobility Windows Server coming up. We've got this online jumpstart. Timeframe is tentatively set for May right now. That's what we're talking about here. Live events, we're going to crisscross the country, is currently tentatively set for July and August. And then we've got other events. So if you go to this page and click on join or register now, and I've got this link in several different places, it all points to aka.ms/admin. And if you go there, that actually forwards you to the Microsoft page to actually go ahead and enter your information and say, yes, I want to I want you to keep me informed about what's going on here. So fill out a couple of short questions and hit submit, and you'll be, or hit continue, and you'll be on the list to get the invite to this pretty awesome event series.
Hey, I'm going to go do that now. That's a great idea to do before I start the next video.
You know, that's actually a good idea. I should do that too, so that I see what's getting put out there. And you know what, everybody else that's listening, you should really do that. And you know what, if you do find that it's not relevant for you, you can always unsubscribe at any time. Every message that goes out will have an unsubscribe. It'll be very clearly from Microsoft. It'll be very clearly from me, or from somebody on my team. It's super easy to subscribe, super easy to unsubscribe, and you don't want to miss this opportunity. So go there now, itproguru.com/join.